That's a new offering.
Yes, we do need to get that on the website. And basically, what I've decided to do is this summer, it's just with our granddaughter and we've got a new grandbaby coming, it's just going to be too much to do a Heartland intensive season again. So we're putting that on hold. But I have had several people who want to do an intensive. So what I've set up, and it actually comes from a whole different place. If you've done a Heartland intensive, you'll note that we come at everything from a fairly soft place in opening and creating a safe space and moving through things. But this one-on-one personal intensive is for someone who's ready to take it all to the next level. And over the last 43 or 44 years since I first discovered still point breathing and realizing that was the key to being out of your mind, to opening physiology to remove whatever disease energies are there. And actually, there's a gentleman here that I'm working with right now. I started this morning, and one of the pieces of the puzzle that I got in working with him was the realization, you know, we talked a lot about the power person dynamic. And because the power person dynamic is always tainted with hostility and fear, and or fear, it's actually a physical disease when we leave that unresolved, stored somewhere in tissue. And so opening that up and removing that is really key. And so since I discovered still point breathing, one of my criteria, if you've done an intensive where we taught hands-on energy field work, one of my criteria in everything, and you know, there are, I don't know, 30 different courses that range anywhere from maybe $200 to $5,000 in order to assemble that energy field work. And the criteria for becoming part of the energy field work was, does it create still point? Does it enhance still point? And in all of that training that I've done over the last decades, there have been several pieces of that puzzle that I couldn't really teach in an intensive setting. One, because some of it is too intense, takes it, you know, distinctly to a new level. And two, without medical training, there are some pieces of the puzzle I just can't hand to somebody without that. So what I've done is pulled the stops out on all of those things that crank the energy up to the next level and move from just a still point to a quantum still point that moves everything to the next level in terms of supporting the mind letting go and making the space for Rukka to really truly move, to really truly open the space for what needs to be worked through. The first gentleman that I did it with had shared with me the search he'd done over a couple of decades to try and have his health restored, and thousands of dollars spent and tens of thousands of miles flown. He was in the airline industry, so he had free airline flights. And just had not reached the space where his health was moving the direction of being restored. Like, I talked with him, did a little processing with him the other night, and headaches that would last for 3 days and three or four or five of those a week. Jaw challenges that led to extreme pain. And, I mean, literally close to two decades, and tens of thousands of dollars spent. And the result of the 3-day personal intensive was his headaches are down to maybe one a week, and instead of being 18 to 24 hours in duration, it's been one headache that's lasted 3 hours in one 3-day session. So that's the kind of effectiveness that's available. And It's for somebody who's, I mean, it could be somebody totally new to the work. They don't have to be acquainted with the work. They just need to stand in a space of willingness. I mean, it's something, it's an intensive that's going to be personally, physically, mentally, and emotionally challenging. So anybody that's ready to do that, you can drop Jeannie a note. Jeannie at whyagain.org. Or pardon me. Yeah, that's it. It's a .org address. And give her your name and address that you have an interest, and I'll be in touch with her about it. Had a lawyer in last week from Montreal that just opened her whole story, has been around this work for, I don't know, 2 decades or so. And that 3-day intensive just put her to the ground zero of the story she's been trying to undo and work through in
She said she was
for 2 decades.
actually going to come back in June and do it again.
Yeah, she's ready. She's already made a commitment for next June to come back. Next June, this June, realizing the depth that she went and that there's more to do. So it's a powerful, fun process. It is exciting to get those quantum still points. It takes everything to a whole different level. It's light years beyond a regular still point. So that's a new offering that we've put in place of doing an intensive season at Heartland this year. And I'll say thank you to the gentleman that we first did it with, because it wasn't something I'd really thought of before. He was coming through this way, and I said, well, he'd been doing the work for, I don't know, 2 years or so, and it's like, I'm ready to do something. And I said, well, come stop. His mother actually passed away, and he was on his way up to the Northeast to partake of her funeral. He said, well, wend your way in this direction, let's do some work. And as I say, I pulled the stops out on some things that I haven't used in intensives because they're just too intense. And it just like out of that was birthed this whole new personal one-on-one intensive. And it's set up right now to be a 3-day. It could be expanded to a 4-day or even a 5-day if somebody is ready to do another level. But 3 days is a really powerful starting point. So that's what's on my plate. I actually just got back from doing the session with the gentleman who came in from Michigan today. So, Ms. Jeannie, we have everybody in the phone queue with a hand up, or anybody in the chat room that has a thought for us?
No, but I had gotten an email, and they're fairly new to the work, and so I sent them some information, but you might want to expand on it. One of the things they ask is, how can I forgive my former?
Okay, so this one may sound like a shocker coming from someone whose specialty over the last 4+ decades has been forgiveness. Never forgive your former. Never forgive yourself. Never forgive anyone, because that's an impossibility. That's a fake thing. And they said, beware of wolf in sheep's clothing. Anybody who tells you need to forgive somebody else for what's going on inside of you is a wolf in sheep's clothing, and or is just plain ignorant of what forgiveness is, just simply doesn't know. And what does that mean? Take in just about the whole world saying, forgive them, forgive them, forgive them. Go back to Yeshua in the Aramaic language, and he never ever suggested forgiving anyone, and he never forgave anyone. But it's a requirement, if you're living as a human being on planet Earth today, to forgive continuously. And for most people, that leaves mass confusion. It's like, well, you're saying never forgive anyone, but forgive continuously. Isn't that an oxymoron? No, not if you know what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is not letting other people off the hook for what's going on inside of you. That's a mistake made by the Greeks, where they took pardoning, I'll let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, and changed the word that represented that process to forgiveness. So in the Greek mindset that we've been fed in this culture, and it's pretty much taken over the world, it goes like this. You did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay. I'll forgive you. I'll be big about it, and I'll let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. Now, that's a really nice gift to give somebody, especially if somebody really is, you know, way out there in left field in error. What a gift to give them. But that's not forgiveness. That's pardoning. So if I choose to pardon someone for what they've done, and then I'll step into doing my forgiveness work, recognizing that, yes, what they did resonated all kinds of pain in me, and because I live in denial and dissociation, I've taken that pain and put it in my brain's image of them, and being a member of the universal one world religion of blame, I've got them to blame for what's happening inside of me. But you'll notice if you've ever done that routine that you've been through that particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, and you're the only one that was there every time. That's all about you. It's not about them. So if I pardon someone and call it what it is, then I'll recognize that now what I need to do is understand that there is a painful response inside of me that I've been putting into my brain's image of everybody else and thinking they're the problem. That's the basic error that governs those who live in the one world universal religion of blame. And by the age of 4, my take is, my offering is from observation, is that virtually everybody on the planet by the age of 4 has become a card-carrying member of that one world universal religion. We are working diligently with our granddaughter, who's 5, keep her out of that religion in a world that, you know, virtually everybody's involved in that religion. So we're helping her to build the brain cells for responsibility. Oh, this is happening inside of me. I'm feeling it, therefore it's mine. Rather than this is happening inside of me, I'm feeling it, and I'm going to pretend that somebody else is the cause of it. So in Aramaic, forgiveness is the tool with which you go inside yourself and remove what never belonged in your structure in the first place. The hate, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the grief, the pain, the drama, and the trauma. So that's forgiveness. Forgive continuously. Whenever there is any form of hostility or fear moving in you, please apply forgiveness. Which means not forgiving anybody, not forgiving yourself, but applying the tool of forgiveness to remove the content from your body-mind unit that pretends that it's caused by somebody else. It takes a major mind shift. That's one of the reasons we call this Mind Shifters Radio. And virtually every tool we teach is a how to access and remove what never belonged in a human energy system in the first place. And to determine what never belonged in a human energy system in the first place, let's determine what a human life is. Or the newborn child. Having asked between Jeannie and I that question of tens of thousands of people all over the globe in many different languages and cultures, everybody's answer in describing the newborn is that of some variation on the theme of love. And I think when you recognize that that's a universal experience, then you start to go, oh, maybe this body-mind unit, maybe this device in which I live, move, and have my being, is designed to facilitate and express the presence of active love. Huh. Human life. What a concept. My body, mind unit is designed for the expression of one energy and one energy only, and that is who I am. Who am I? I am the active presence of love. If I've lost that, then I've been brainwashed by the culture with all kinds of crazy hostility and fear-based ideas that I think are mine, that I think are about me, that I blame myself for, or that I think are about somebody else. And all of that's got to go. And making it go, the act of removing it, is forgiveness. So, is there something you need to pardon your former for? Get about doing it, and then go to work with the sadness, the grief, the rage, the fear, the hatred, the vengeance, whatever the dynamics are that are left over in your mind, and start to remove them. And when you stop putting them, those energetic patterns, into your brain's image of your former, watch how your relationship with your former will transform. It will change. And watch how your relationship with everybody around you changes. Because once you put your hostility or fear into your brain's image of someone else, from there it's easy for it to diffuse into your brain's image of anybody that you run into that violates the goal you hold for them. You take a look at the world right now, especially in the political world, all the rage, all the crazy stuff going on, and you'll notice that it's all people with internal pain that have stories to tell about how other people have violated their goals, and therefore other people are responsible for their pain. The only one responsible for your pain is you, the only one who has put an energy into your structure that doesn't belong there. Of course, a lot of it came along with the package in your genes, and then came your culture and your family system, and because we didn't know any better, we bought into those things. So this work is about cleaning up your own body-mind unit, which is your own multi-generational database. And when you look at what the generations have done, you know, you think about the hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the pain, the drama, the atrocities. You look at the fact that on planet Earth over the last 75 years, we've killed over 175 million people in war. What kind of trauma and pain is being carried around in those people, in the genetic descendants of those people who've been through that? That's all the stuff that needs to be faced, felt, and forgiven, removed from the structure in order for humanity to be free of it. In the meantime, most everybody lives in denial. What's our definition in this work of denial? When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm in denial. In order for my mind to hallucinate a reality that somebody outside of me is the cause of this moving in me, I have to hide from myself the cause of what's moving in me, which means I dissociate from the cause of my pain. Once I dissociate, I've created an unnatural condition called an unconscious mind. And I hide from myself the fact I am holding this energy that is the cause of my pain. And what I need to do is step into the process of forgiveness to remove it. And, you know, over the last 44, 45 years, I've been working on how do we get this, which is, you know, in most people's conceptual language, unspeakable. How do we get past all the beliefs that it's everybody else's fault? You know, if you look at when did the one world universal religion of blame begin? Well, if we look in the Western scriptures, we see, at least in that set of scriptures, where it began. You'll remember, there was a man and a woman in a garden. And after the crazy stuff started to happen, the creator of the garden said to one of its beneficiaries, Adam, "So what are you doing? What's going on here?" And you remember that Adam had a response. And his response was, "That woman you gave me." So now Adam takes no responsibility whatsoever for his folly. And he's got a woman to blame. You know, it reminds me of that melody line from that that song of, what was his name? Wasted Away Again in Margaritaville. And some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but he resolves it. He says, but I know it's my own damn fault. And we need to wake up. And we're not looking to make people step into the place of fault or self-blame. That's just another error. What we're looking to do is to support people in learning how to literally reach into their own structures, remove content that never belonged, and heal. So that's what we're here to do. And delighted that you're here to be part of the process.
And you have a hand up.
Well, let's say hello. Welcome.
Miss Susan 610, you're on the air.
Oh, Michael, Jeannie, you're talking about this one world religion of blame. And we
yes.
have a small earthquake here in our area. Actually, in
I heard about
eastern,
that.
Western New Jersey. A lot of my neighbors, I didn't feel it. Maybe I was jumping up and down because I was teaching this morning.
Huh?
But my first thought is, this has been talked about in the Bible. We'll have floods. We'll have earthquakes. The end is coming. And it's all your fault. It's all our fault. So this is rather a big blame thing going on here in my understanding of that prediction in the Bible. I don't know whether you can comment on that or...
Oh, I can. I have
okay,
some thoughts
go ahead.
For you. Thoughts you've never heard
all
before.
Right. Okay.
Well, let's start with, once again, recognizing that it's an inside job. And you'll notice
okay.
that the word responsibility has no reference whatsoever to blame, guilt, or fault.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about forgiveness, we're not saying that if you need to do forgiveness, then you're to blame for what's going on. We're not saying you're guilty. We're not saying you're at fault. We're just saying if you put an energy into your structure or into the world that disturbs your structure or the world, then you are responsible for what energetic patterns you've set in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you recognize that this is a, you'll remember at the top of the worksheet, no fault. It's not about establishing fault. It's about recognizing if this is going on in my world, in my physiology, in my family system, in my culture, you know, in my town, and I'm a participant, then it's my responsibility. And when I take
mm-hmm.
responsibility, then I can start to own, and what I've dissociated from and hidden from myself, I can start to bring back to awareness, and I can start to literally throw out of my structure, which means I can forgive it. I can remove it. As long as I'm in the blame game, thinking that responsibility means blame, and, you know, Vladimir Lenin, the man responsible probably for more deaths on planet Earth than anyone in history, said the way you destroy a culture is change the meaning of its words. Responsibility just means that. It means I'm a player here. I'm not independent of the world around me. And if I take responsibility, then I can forgive. I can remove those energetic patterns. No blame, no fault.
Mm. Okay.
Does
then
that make
question.
Sense?
That's good. It does. We are individuals as we perceive ourselves on this planet, and we are not separate. We as a kind of consciousness have, I mean, we're in trouble, as you often say, look at our political situation and everything. It seems as if we take personal responsibility and do our own work, that it's absolutely no guarantee that we can stop the direction in which things appear to be going. And because they appear to be going in that direction, we have to do more work on ourselves as far as fear, dread, whatever is in there about the direction this appears to be going. And I must say,
right.
I have to add, being almost 80, what I feel most of all now is that I feel personally, individually lucky because I might just shed my body before the worst happens. Not sure about that. But then tremendous regret for those left behind, those I know first, but those I don't know, including animals who are going to suffer, or who are going to maybe experience pain, maybe they don't suffer. I don't know about that. I know there's a distinction. But I don't know how to put this into a question, but if we do our work, there's no guarantee. Okay, go ahead.
So here's your next assignment.
All right.
Part of what's going to hold the pattern of degeneration in place rather than turn it around is the fact that there are many minds who hold a fear-based energy called regret.
Mm.
And that needs to be forgiven. So that I come to the world and, you know, I've pondered this question for many years and looked at it very seriously. And there was a time when I considered quitting doing this work because it's like there are too many crazy people. There's too much hatred. There's too much vengeance. There's just too much to, you know, I'm going to just go find a place to be safe and comfortable and forget it all.
Yeah.
And then I comprehended the words of a man named Yeshua, the physicist, who said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. What I'm personally working to do, ultimately, the commitment is to make this available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. That doesn't mean I'm going to speak, whatever, 300 different languages and go to every country in the world to teach forgiveness. What it does mean
mm-hmm.
is I'm going to deliver it to enough people like you and me and the other listeners to the show who are going to use it, and together we are going to create a critical mass energetically.
Mm.
And as Yeshua the physicist said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. If we can get just that small critical mass number of people through the gate actually doing their work, then the energy of healing will become so bright and available that everything else will pale by comparison. All the rage, all the blame, all the crazy stuff that's going on, all the inflicting pain on others and inflicting pain on ourselves and playing all of that will pale by comparison of the bright possibility of, oh, there's a light, there's a thing called forgiveness. And when enough people join with that light, then it becomes a viable option for every mind, heart, and being on the planet, and they don't even have to speak language. Because it will become energetically, intuitively available from within. To me, that's hope.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say, is you have kept your hope. That's wonderful. Yeah. I love the leavening idea. And I hear you talk about it.
Yeah, that was a savior. That was a real savior for me.
Because
otherwise I'd have given up. I mean, how do we get these people at such hate and rage, war, murder, I mean, just craziness? If we can just bring one more on board, who actually uses the tools, then energetically the tools become a viable option.
That's
in critical mass, turn the whole game around.
Even though the critical mass, the individuals that join that critical mass and who are using the tools are still working on themselves. I mean, they're not done with their work. They're just heading in that direction.
Enough people heading in the direction is going to bring a transforming energy to the whole of humanity.
Oh, Those are good words to hear.
Well, yeah. To me, it makes it all worthwhile. And as more and more people, you know, one of the things I observe is that, you know, 20 years ago when I taught this, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and people would hear it, and it was just like total, complete, you know, babble to them.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Today, most people hear it and go, okay, well, that's making some sense. What do I need to do? And
right.
begin to embark on it much easier than they ever have.
Yes, and a lot of other people are doing similar work paralleling yours.
Absolutely.
And that's so encouraging, too. Yeah.
To me, that's the hope of it. And that's
mm-hmm.
why I maintain my hope. And I watch the kinds of transformations that take place. And when somebody goes, really, truly goes to depth and makes
mm-hmm.
that shift, it's energetically, it's major. I mean, I've used the example before of, you know, check out the patent offices around the world, and you'll find there's some distinctly new, never thought of before patents that have been patented, and they were patented on three different continents by three
right.
different people who had no communication with each other, and they all
mm-hmm.
had the same patent. To me, that's an example of critical mass, that when
yeah.
an option, each person who does a piece of work, the person who's got the, you know, the marital problem makes a breakthrough, they introduce an energy that becomes available to every person on the planet who has marital problems. The person who has financial problems, they break through, they do the work to clean that up, and they bring an energy in that makes the possibility of moving through those things available to everyone who has financial problems. People who have problems with their neighbors, people who have problems with drugs, with alcohol, with food, whatever it is. Each person, you know, when I think about that, you know, through the eyes of my physics training from my early education, and I think about, you know, somebody in Italy and somebody in Massachusetts and somebody in Columbia, South America patented a totally new, never thought of before device in all three places the same day. That's not a coincidence.
Weird.
That's to me, that demonstrates the fact that when an energy comes into the world, it becomes available to anybody who's ready for it, anybody who's in resonance for it. So each person, you'll notice how often when somebody makes a real breakthrough on the show, I'm in total gratitude for the work they've done because they made something available that wasn't available yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get enough people doing that, each opening, each healing experience becomes an energy that somebody in Colombia or somebody in Italy or somebody in Timbuktu can take hold of energetically and make the same shift.
Mm.
That's the hope of it to me.
That's good. Thanks for mentioning that you have been very discouraged. I mean, I think we get individually discouraged, and then we hear about somebody who's doing this work the way you are, somebody we admire and look up to, and you're doing it, and you admit to having had that kind of discouragement. That's encouraging somehow. It's just like saying, you can drag us along with you.
Yeah, there was a time when I thought about it. It's like, oh, there's so much hate. There's so much war. There's so much, I mean, just mass insanity. Who could change all of that?
Yeah.
And then the understanding, you know, fortunately, I had these brain cells from my physics training as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm talking high school. And when I went to technical school, this stuff was like, you know, about electronics and physics. And what has that got to do with spiritual healing? Well,
right.
It's the core of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so that understanding, and then, oh, I don't know when it was, it's decades ago that I came across that piece of information about patents. And then there's another really interesting demonstration of that or example of that. And there was a guy, a medical doctor, his name will come to me as I'm talking about it, but he did multiple personality research. And in one particular experiment, there's one experiment he outlines where this woman had diabetes. And, you know, if you don't give her insulin, she dies.
Right.
And she's a known multiple. They take her into the laboratory. They're measuring all of her, you know, chemistry, all of her stats. And they induce a personality shift. Now, here's a woman that if you check her pancreas and her normal personality, she's got full-blown diabetes, and it'll kill her. And they induce a personality shift, which, again, with my electronics and physics training, says they changed the vibration that was running her physiology. The governing resonant energy in her physiology shifted, and she had another very complex persona, personality, a very complex collection of frequencies that ran her mind. So her personality's changed. And guess what? Her diabetes disappears when that happens. Her so-called physical disease called diabetes disappears. Now, when she goes back to her original persona, she's back to diabetes. Now, what that says to me with my physics understanding is this is nothing but an energy system, you know, and then bring Einstein in on such things as matter. We have been all wrong. What we've heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. We don't live in a material world. We live in an energetic world. Our eye, our brain produces pictures that make things look solid, so we think that they're solid. But they're not solid, they're energy. I mean, if you went into that woman's pancreas, you'd say when she's in her normal personality, you know, this thing is terribly dysfunctional. It is chemically altered to the point where she is at risk of dying if she eats too much sugar. And then minutes later, if you were to go in and investigate her pancreas, it's a perfectly healthy pancreas. There is no threat of diabetes there.
That's amazing. You know, you mentioned John Sarno and his work and that he was really ahead of his time, although he was closer to his time than an uncle we have of Tim's, Charles Bingham, Dr. Charles Bingham, who was laughed out of his profession because he said, illness is psychosomatic. That was the word he used. He wrote a book.
Yeah.
It seemed like a nutcase book, and they just thought he was a nut. And he, as a result probably of all that ostracism, he did become quite a pain in the ass as far as a person goes. I mean, he was, but he had it. He got it, but he was way ahead of his time. That's just unfortunate. I mean, I feel badly for him, but the book is still here, and maybe I wish I could find it. I think
I'd like to see the book. Text me the information, I'd like to look for it and see if I can find it. But here's my offering. I say thank you to him.
Yeah.
Because he brought an energy in. How long ago was that?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
how long
let's
ago?
See. He was Tim's uncle, so he died in probably the late 1970s. He was one of Tim's father's brothers, older brothers, Charles Bingham.
So he wrote his book probably in the 50s?
Yeah.
That's the time at which I was starting to tap into this. And
wow.
So maybe Charles set the frequency up that helped me to catch on. I mean, I was programmed to be a factory worker. That's what I was supposed to do. My father was a factory worker, and I was supposed to go work in the factory. He could never understand why I wouldn't do that. I mean, I went and took a job where I made, well, I hate to admit it, but I was working about 70 hours a week, and I made $50 a week. And I put in a 70-hour week. And my father had a place for me in the a major factory that he worked in, that he managed a department in, where I'd have made triple that for working a 40-hour week. And he could not understand why I would not go there.
Yeah.
But I knew there was something different. And I wasn't going to do that. So maybe I can personally thank your uncle or Tim's uncle for that.
Yeah, well,
that energy that
I can
allowed
too.
Me to lock I on can. And how many others.
So we can do the work and contribute to the collective good, even though we're still, like, Celinda's amazing wake-up sheet with Tim Hayes 2 days ago.
Right.
She was working on something that was happening when she was a tiny girl. And I remember thinking, not about her, remarking about her, because I've thought this thought many times, is, my God, she's my age, and why aren't we over this stuff yet? We're still doing that early work, and I'm doing my own. I have the little girl issues, too. And one of my other uncles, Alfred Bingham, wonderful man, who just struggled with depression till his last days, and did a lot of therapy and looking at a very open, loving human being, but didn't get comfortable on the planet before he shed his body. His work wasn't done. And I guess it's okay, because that's another thought that, like, if we can't get our act together in the 70 to 80 to 90 years we have, most of us have on the planet, what hope is there? But you're saying there is. It doesn't have to be perfect. Oh, that's good.
Well, Susan, I mean, he was ostracized to the point of driving him crazy, but look how normal our conversation is today. Look how this has become.
Yeah.
I mean, there are whole institutes of healing that are dedicated to that principle. And many
that's
professionals
true.
Practicing it.
Yeah, so, oh, that's good. Okay, thanks. It did have an impact, even though he wasn't around physically to get any kind of positive feedback for it.
Right.
As you say.
What was the name of his book?
I can't tell you. Because I haven't been able to find it. Tim had it in his library, and I don't know where it is. I'll ask around. I know there's a copy for sure in the family compound in Salem, Connecticut, that place where I suggested you run a retreat years ago, and it was all booked up, remember? It's a wonderful place. It would be a perfect place for a retreat. I'm sure there's a copy around somewhere, and when I find it, I'll let you know.
Cool.
It
would be awesome.
I'd love to read it again myself.
Yeah. But it takes that kind of mind that stands against the winds of the prevailing opinion, that stands up and says, no, this is what I'm being guided to. This is what I've got. And thank you very much for all that you think you know. But, you know, that which goes against it is crazy. And that's how a new field, a new study, a new understanding begins. You know, there was a time in this world where, you know, if you said that you were going to build a device over which people could communicate long distances through wires, they'd have laughed you off the planet and told you how crazy you were.
True. Yeah.
And then that became the norm. And then if you said to somebody, and you can communicate over long distance without wires, they'd have said, right, Bill. Yep, we got how insane you are. And now, I mean, you know, I can push a few buttons on a little piece of plastic with a glass screen on it here, and I can be talking to Peter in Sweden inside of about 8 seconds.
Right.
And it took somebody to stand up against. I mean, you know, when the telephone was first patented, the scuttlebutt in the newspapers was, well, who would want some kind of a bell ringing in your home throughout the day and in the middle of the night? That was one of the objections to this thing called the telephone.
Yep.
But somebody brings it in, somebody makes a commitment to it, and it becomes available. And it's all frequency and it's all energy. And, you know, I mentioned the other day that I'm working on a new article that started out as an Easter greeting. It's the Aramaic story of Easter. And putting into this language of ours, because this Greek-oriented language so bastardizes what the man Yeshua said in Aramaic that it's ridiculous. I mean, it would be like somebody who heard about this thing called a telephone and they're going to write a story about it before the telephone ever actually is invented or functions. And what's their story going to look like? Well, most people who had a non-functional understanding of what Yeshua taught wrote stories about it, and it's non-functional. I mean, it's still based in fear. It's still based in punishment. It still speaks of a creator that Yeshua said was our Father, whose good pleasure it is to give us the kingdom. It still speaks about that as some punishing hellfire and brimstone kind of creator, which was one of the most ridiculous ideas that's ever been expressed on the earth. But minds who were filled with hellfire and brimstone actually believed that stuff and still do today. In fact, they'll tell you you're going to hell if you don't believe that their hell is really a creation of a creator called love. I mean, think about it for a minute.
True. Oh, yeah. Crazy. I think about it a lot. Right?
Yeah. So thank you, Uncle, for bringing that vibration into the world and being one of the forerunners of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet.
I love that idea of thanking him. That's good.
Well, I will personally look forward to reading his book and thanking him more directly once I've been able to tap into his vibration a little deeper, even though he's not in his body.
Right.
In fact, let's ask him. Let's invite him. You know, you've got the genes that connect with him. You know, being intimately connected with, well, that means you do. The day you two had intercourse is the day that you exchanged genes. You are genetically connected to him.
Oh, yeah, I remember you talked about that. Okay. Right.
So you might invite him to be on your team for understanding this and feedback some of what you're understanding and learning to him, because he's still alive. He may not be in his body, or he may be in another body at this point. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's still alive and well. So let's invite him in to support us and maybe bring in some new wrinkles, some new understanding, some new aspects of it that we haven't thought of before that he totally comprehended and wrote about. Or maybe was only suspecting but wrote about, but did start to bring that vibration, that energy into the earth.
Good thoughts.
Yay. And as far as going back and touching into those early dynamics, you know, remember the power person dynamic. And the power person dynamic literally is running the world. And the power person was dynamic. I don't care whether you're the president of AT&T or of the UAW auto workers or of ExxonMobil. Your genetics were influenced by the generations that went before you. And the power person dynamic, I don't care which one of those executives you are, or you're the president of the United States, or you're a peon in, you know, Central Asia somewhere. Your power person dynamic started and was well established probably by the age of four.
Yeah.
And it's the power person dynamics were established in most family systems, were established generations and generations and generations ago. And each one who becomes willing, as Celinda was, to open that genetic memory, to open that early power person dynamic and begin to breathe life through it, to dissolve it, and step into something else opens a space for every other person willing to do their work?
That's a very hopeful thought.
It's accelerating. I know that, you know, right where I do with the radio show, there's a shelf on the wall right across from where I do the radio show. And there's a picture of my former partner, Dan McDougald. Dan was the man who originally owned the Cabours manuscript, brought it back from Turkey, and dedicated his whole life and fortune to bring that into the world. And I oftentimes look up at Dan and say, thank you, Dan. If you've got any more information for me, I'm here to listen to it.
Wow.
Give me your guidance. Support me in understanding this. This man was just a giant, giant of an intellect. You know, in the Navy, he was in the Navy in World War II, and they did IQ tests on everybody in the Navy, and he was number three or number four in IQ in the U.S. Navy in World War II. And we all have, I think, the right and the opportunity to invite those, and even invite those who originated some of the traumas that we need to work through, to invite their input and their support in energetically undoing them and facing those things and working through them. And then, of course, as Yeshua said, I'll always be available. So joining you in the process.
And we don't necessarily get through. We work with it as best we can, and we don't necessarily get through.
Well, you know, it's a process. It's not an event. Mm-hmm. It's not something that happens once. And you've heard me say this many times that, you know, for me personally, in terms of my own personal healing process, I've gone further in the last, or done deeper work in the last 2 or 3 years than I did in the previous 50 years.
Mm.
And I expect I'll probably have, you know, actually I had a really deep opening just the other morning that was really profound for me, and it was on the upside and on the positive side, on the plus side. It wasn't about dealing with a trauma, but it was in a space of tapping into the presence of love and extending that love. And I had just a wave, literally a wave that went from my waist up into my shoulders and into my head of what I would identify as a ripple of the energy of the pure presence of love just moving through my own physiology.
Wow.
Something I'd never experienced on that level before. I mean, it was just like this literal wave. And now, if I'd have been in a mindset other than doing this work, I probably wouldn't have paid attention to it. But just being
wow.
with it, and it was just this sensation that was just awesome going through my physical form. And so, you know, I think each one of us who does our work is going to move through and do deeper and deeper levels of cleaning up our own genes and have more and more expression of what we're designed for. And that is that this physical device, so-called physical device we call a body-mind unit, is literally designed to incarnate love. And this experience was on a level that I'd never experienced before.
That's wonderful.
It was. It was pretty awesome. Pretty sweet. I spent about the next hour or so just hanging out with that energy. And it's available to all of us. we're designed for it. It's our most natural genetic design. And the world's holding up this raging conversation that it wants everybody to pay attention to so that we don't pay attention to what in the ancient teachings was called the still small voice that is within us. And we start paying attention to that. And we start to feel the physiological effects of it, would be my take.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Well, good work, Michael.
Yay.
It isn't very often I say that to you, but I'm saying
I'm delighted. Received, accepted, and good. Passed on. And returned.
Good.
All right, we're down to the last minute or so. So thank you for the conversation, the questions, the thoughts, and everybody have the best year yet of your eternal life. Breathing with you. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Take care. Bye-bye.